everyone is a star child, made of stardust and the infinite potential of the universe. This extraordinary, fearless something in each of us clamors for freedom from the bonds of fear, conformity, and an ordinary life. Welcome to Dr. Durr's Living in the Sweet Spot, where practical tools and solutions from the intersection of mind-body medicine, science, and spiritual well-being awaken and empower you to live out your infinite potential, to live life in the sweet spot. The U.S. Surgeon General Vivek Murthy warned that widespread social media use among kids and teens poses a significant mental health risk that needs to be addressed immediately. As a matter of fact, he recommended putting warnings on social media sites for kids and teens. In this episode, Screen Trap, the hidden dangers of excessive screen time for kids, we're going to discuss the alarming effects of prolonged screen exposure on children's health and their development. We'll also uncover the physical, mental, and emotional toll that excessive screen time can take on young minds. This includes things like disrupted sleep patterns, impaired social skills, and the fact that caregivers are able to take control, help their children by managing their screen time and promoting healthier behavior and more balance in their children's activities. So joining me today for this conversation is Dr. Connie McReynolds. Hey there.
Hi, how are you? It's good to be here.
Hey, I'm doing great and welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely. As I've said before, you're welcome anytime.
Oh, thank you.
So for those who may have missed the two previous episodes that we did with Dr. McReynolds about her book, Solving the ADHD Riddle, Dr. McReynolds is the author of Solving the ADHD Riddle, The Real Cause and Lasting Solutions to Your Child's Struggle to Learn. She is a licensed psychologist and certified rehabilitation counselor with more than 30 years of experience. And she is the visionary founder of Prominent Neurofeedback Clinics. Dr. McReynolds reveals why current diagnoses aren't working and what you as a parent need to know in order to guide your child back to a life that is fully functional, happy, and successful.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's, in your past experiences have brought you here to this moment doing this work.
Mm-hmm. So just as a thumbnail sketch of that, I've really been in the field for over 30 years, as you mentioned, and started out with rehabilitation counseling and helping people with all different types of, impacts into their life, whether it's work or at home or family relationships, whatever it might have been. And with that then evolved over the years. I often talk about my mother having taught second grade for 32 years in the same classroom, and that I kind of grew up in second grade with her and learning a lot about how children went through school and how they learned and how the processes worked, but also what wasn't working. And I think it was that piece that as time went on really piqued my curiosity as I moved out to Southern California and had the opportunity to start building institutes out here to help children. And we work with children and adults. Our youngest has been 3 and our oldest is 93. And they used to meet in the hallway and shake hands. And the one thing they had in common is we had to teach both of them how to use the mouse.
That's hilarious.
And they both learned. This is the important part. They both learned. So it really was that process of just uncovering what I call the root cause of a lot of these challenges that people are experiencing. Mm-hmm. Some of that certainly around auditory and visual processing difficulties that we are now able to identify fairly quickly with less than 40 minutes of computer-based assessment, we can really get to the root cause of what's going on. And then with that, we have some strategies to help people kind of overcome that. And just briefly, I'll say real quickly, and I just have a new free guidebook for adults up on my website. So if you want to click on that, it's From Chaos to Clarity. So it's free. Just go up there. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about some of this a little bit later, but I just want to put a plug in. If you're looking for something, need a little help and a little insight, it's there. It's free. And just enjoy it and let me know what you think about it.
So, you know what? Let's go ahead and get into these concerns about screen time. And I think, you know, one of the things, even for myself, I remember, you know, I'm a single parent. Mm-hmm. My son is very young. And I don't remember his exact age, but let's just say he was around 5 ± a year when mm-hmm. iPads came out. And, mm-hmm. you know, for me, as, you know, as a single parent with a small child, particularly when, like, if we were in the car and going mm-hmm. to, if I'm going shopping, and mm-hmm. I tell folks, you know, I have a shopping gene, so I can be, you know, hours shopping. And so when you've got, you know, a little guy, to give him something to do to keep him engaged, mm-hmm. you know, that to me seemed ideal. And I remember when they first came out, the minis, and this is, I'm talking about, actually, I should say the mini iPads, when they first came out is what I'm actually talking about. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know if Apple realized this or not, but I said, this is going to be a huge hit for parents with small kids, right? Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
But the thing that I didn't realize was actually about the fact that I wasn't really making the connection to the fact that really everything we do is, especially when we do it over and over again, is we're literally mm-hmm. rewiring the brain. We're wiring, so, like, you know, if you want to play the piano, right? Mm-hmm. You're wiring your brain in order to do that activity, to play the keys, mm-hmm. to read the music, to listen to the sound, to count. All of that stuff is you're wiring it. The other thing too, then, you know, fast forward many years later, and I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and I see the episode about the game where there's a game that comes onto board onto the Star Trek Next Generation, onto the Enterprise, and it basically enslaves the crew. So, you know, a couple of the younger adolescents, they realize what's going on. And then so they're trying to free everybody. But it showed basically where it's, you know, they're watching the video. It's a video game. Mm-hmm. And it was only much later when I saw that, I was like, oh, my God, that I was like, you know what? That was not sci-fi. I mean, just that was not just sci-fi, right? Mm-hmm. That while the extent of it, of what they portrayed in the episode, I think was potentially extreme, right? It wasn't, because again, somebody was trying to take over the crew and the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. But to me, what it speaks to is the fact, again, is that wiring the brain in such a way that it can become, and you're hitting that dopamine, which of course mm-hmm. is pleasure and, mm-hmm. you know, motivation. Mm-hmm. So for some people that can become addictive. You know, that dopamine release, right?
Yes.
Just the same way you can from you know, from alcohol and mm-hmm. marijuana and cocaine and sex and food, right? Is releasing dopamine. Right.
Yes.
So I was like, oh my goodness, what have we done?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For your parents.
Yes. It became a true trap. And I think the title Screen Trap is so appropriate for this discussion, because, you know, there are pros and cons to this, like you've mentioned. And yet when we don't fully appreciate the extent of how this can kind of worm its way in, mm-hmm. if you will, into the conscious and subconscious mind, we are we're kind of at a disadvantage at that point when we're not fully cognizant, if you will, or fully aware of the pros and cons. And I have these conversations all the time with parents who come into the clinic and mentioning addiction. We've actually treated some children who truly have been addicted to the point of really tough behaviors at home that the parents were struggling to manage. One little boy, he was 12, had such an addiction that as they started to try to wean him off of this, he became fairly destructive in the house. And theirs was kind of an extreme situation, of course, but these are real cases. This is real. This is exactly what we talk about when we're talking about the massive dopamine dump that happens with a lot of these games. And the more impactful and engaging and rewarding the game is to keep children engaged, it's what's really the type of video game, what we call high impact games, that drive that dopamine dump. And just so your listeners know, this research goes back to 1999 when scientists were studying the impact and the effect of these video games on dopamine production in children's brains. And children who struggle with attention, concentration, focus may have a lower amount of dopamine naturally occurring. And then these games reward them with dopamine. And what that means is then they become more accustomed to having more and more of that in their brain. And that's a feel good. That's a feel-good neurotransmitter. We want more and more of that when we get it. So the difficulty then is when it becomes too much and the brain doesn't produce its own then.
Yeah, and I think more, again, more than just feeling good, I think it's important to remember it actually is pleasure. Dopamine mediates pleasure. So, you know, then that's an entirely different level than just the feel-good. Mm-hmm. That's the feel-great. That's the feel-euphoria. You know, I feel euphoric kind of stuff. So yeah, let me get some more of that.
And who wouldn't want more of that? The difficulty, of course, as we know, is that the more the brain becomes dependent on that external source to create that, then the less likely the brain is going to be to even produce what it typically would have been producing. So we get in an inverted situation to where then the game is necessary to maintain any kind of level of dopamine in the brain because the brain itself has stopped producing it on its own. And it was low anyway for a lot of these folks. So now it takes the game to get you to what would be kind of a level playing field, which is really the truth of addiction.
Yeah. And as you were speaking about the little guy, reminds me actually of a friend of mine some years ago. Things got so bad with her son that she actually had to call the police.
Yeah.
And because of his behavior, like you said, was mm-hmm. getting, you know, aggressive because mm-hmm. of when, you know, no, you can't play the game. And, you know, I hear, you know, other parents and grandparents saying some similar things about, you know, with their kids or grandkids sometimes is, mm-hmm. you know, that they're falling out. And I mean, you know, of course you expect sometimes kids to have tantrums, but it's just the level and the degree to which it's happening and the frequency mm-hmm. to which it's happening when you try to limit it. And so limit their playing. And then also to your point, the other thing that happens when we engage in something where it's addictive, then of course our world gets very small. And the reason mm-hmm. it gets very small is because of course the focus now becomes centered on, in this case with the game, using the game and playing mm-hmm. the game. And so then we're not spending our time developing, in terms of when you're talking about kids and adolescents, they're not spending their time developing themselves mm-hmm. in the ways that are important for mm-hmm. their social emotional development mm-hmm. and taking on responsibilities as adults.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's kind of the hidden factor also, it's a hidden danger, as you implied in the title here, which is it just seems like it can take over. And it's difficult then for parents to know, well, where did it cross over? Where did it become too much? Where did this start becoming a problem? And that is kind of the age-old piece. And it's the behaviors. It's always back to the behaviors. if my child, if I try to set limits, what are the behavioral responses to that? So if there's pushback or resistance, well, we all have a little bit of that when we have our own preferred activities versus the non-preferred, like cleaning and doing dishes and laundry and maybe a few of those things. I'd rather be doing something that makes me feel better than that. But, we all have to kind of make some choices
here.
Do
what's required. We got to do what's required. Yeah.
We do. We have to do what's required.
At least sometimes.
And the challenge is there's kind of this falseness that is assumed within these video games, the ones where the kids can connect together, through the system, and they have their little headset and they're talking to each other. And I heard one of my little cousins one time say, oh, I've got all these really great friends. It's like, really, who are they? Oh, and it was some comic name or something, and they don't know who these people are. This could be a 50-year-old man posing. So you do not know who these folks are. These kids think these are their friends. And that is, I think, the hazard of social media as well, because we have going to wax just a little bit on this one, because everyone's considered a friend. So, oh, that's my friend. It's like, well, who is your friend? Well, it's, whatever the name is. Mm-hmm. You have no idea where that person even lives.
Right.
Oh, but this is my good friend. We talk all the time. It's like, I had a 20-something-year-old in my office. I do therapy as well. And she was ready to get engaged to this person that they've been chatting with, just chatting, for a year and a half. And she was ready to move out of the house and go get a house and move in with this person because they were convinced that they were going to be together. And I said, well, what's this person's last name? She didn't know.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. As you talk about all of this, and what came to mind in terms of was actually in Star Wars, because again, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, is in episode six, the Admiral, when they're about to attack the Death Star, and they realize that the defense systems are actually active, right? And they're about to, and he's like, it's a trap.
Yes.
They actually do have weapons. They actually do. Not only do you have the defenses, they got weapons. So it's this whole thing about the fantasy that we can, as human beings, can end up engaging in, both because our lives are so stressful.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to find that place of happiness, mm-hmm. trying to find connections with other people through a means where it's out of balance, and two, mm-hmm. it's not necessarily keeping with reality, because we don't really know folks. We haven't seen them, like you said, don't know last names, don't know where they live, don't know who they're connected to, haven't spent time with them. But mm-hmm. but again, in terms of for this conversation, then not understanding what the impacts of the excessive screen time is on kids, mm-hmm. socially and emotionally. So right. Let's talk about that.
Sure.
What are some of those negative impacts?
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly know there's enough research out there about sedentary lifestyles. And when you think about, how are these games played? Well, you're not out in a park doing this, running around. You're sitting inside your house at a computer or gaming on your sofa or on the floor somewhere. So your brain can be active, but your body isn't. So there's no activity that's transpiring for these kids. And let's think about what we know. Blue light activates certain parts of the brain. We also know that it will shut down the production of melatonin. And so when parents will say, well, my kid's up till 2 o'clock in the morning, it's like, well, what's the screen time? It's like, oh, they've got it hidden underneath their bed or their sheets or whatever. And I said, they're never going to be able to go to sleep because that blue light is keeping them activated as if it's daytime. And so the brain itself cannot manufacture then the melatonin. And so then they'll give them melatonin, and it's like, well, That's great, but let's look at the other causal factor here for are there other strategies that we can, investigate? So let's try this out. And I see kind of a pattern sometimes in parents where they kind of need to take the role of active leadership a little more in the family with their children. And I see a little bit of tendency sometimes to not to want to kind of hold the line for fear of making the child upset. My child's going to cry, or I'm going to have active.
Let me just say this. That was never a consideration for my mother.
Yeah. Mine either. Yeah. The pendulum has swung a little bit, I think, but we kind of need to get back into the middle of here where parents really need to be kind of monitoring what this is. And there are ways that you can do these things. And quite frankly, problem solving is one of the things that is being lost in all of this,
So,
which is.
let me just say this a little bit because I think it's an important point. We have the in a family, you have roles. And so I think it's important as a parent to ask yourself, what is my role and responsibility as a parent? And not upsetting your kids is not on the list of duties. It's and what I mean by that, and I'm talking about when it comes to setting limits and keeping your children safe and ensuring that they become mature, responsible adults. Those are on the duty list as a parent. And so, obviously I'm not talking about doing things that are harmful to your kids and upsetting them in that way, but I am saying about the fact in terms of they have to learn again sometimes that you can't always have what you want when you want and do what you want when you want because that's not being responsible. That's not controlling your impulses. That's not controlling your appetites. And those kind of behaviors, if they're not nipped in the bud, are going to lead to very destructive, unhappy adult lives. So when I have the conversation with parents, one of the things I say to them is if your kids are engaging in a negative behavior, if you're rewarding them for it, you need to recognize whether it's money or some other kind of reward that if you're rewarding them for it, then you're paying them to engage in behaviors that you don't want. So I think it's important to again look at it in that context.
It's very important, yes, because having had parents who are kind of doing all of those things when they come through, we had two little boys. They weren't little, they were maybe 8, 9, old enough to certainly be able to manage themselves. And when I do my assessments, yeah, I can figure out, okay, what's auditory and visual processing. And these children's behaviors were so extraordinarily unmanageable that I would have expected that they didn't really have a lot of auditory and visual processing. But in fact, that was not the case. In this particular case, this was purely a situation where they had never been told the word no, ever. And the one child was literally climbing up over the sofa, walking on the back of the sofa. The other would be on the floor, and anytime they did something that was disruptive, the mother would feed them their snacks. And this is exactly what you're talking about, which is reinforcing the bad behavior. And I have rarely ever had to say, I'm sorry, we can't, work with you. But with these children, it was so severe, we actually could not work with them. I had two clinicians in the room. One had to stand in front of the door while the other one was trying to manage the child. And at one point, the mother would be down on the floor wrestling with the children. So this is truly an extreme case, but it drives home the point that if children don't learn where social boundaries and where their boundaries are, you end up having children who then, when they're in middle school and moving on up, they eventually moved out of the area to another state. And I've often thought about them because I've thought, I don't know what these children are going to be like when they're teenagers, because they've never learned self-regulation at all. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty telling and concerning.
Absolutely.
Parents have to be parents, and children have to know. Children are always looking for where the boundary is. They need to know, what are the rules? Where can I go? And they have a sense of security mm-hmm. when they know what the rules are, and those rules are consistently reinforced and supported, which is really, we wax into how do you deal with excessive screen time? That's it. You know, when we'll get into that piece, it's consistency.
Yeah, it's loving your children enough to say, this is too much mm-hmm. and it's harmful. And so we need to find the middle ground on this and find some balance. So I tell you what, let's take a break and then we'll come back again. We'll pick up on the effects of, you know, the harmful effects of excessive screen time. Heaven Abounds in You takes you on an inward journey of discovery that dramatically transforms your outward experience of life. Discover the power of belief. Utilize it in connection with science to create a vision of meaning and purpose that pulls you forward. Let go of the meager me to discover the magnificent me. Let go of your painful past and live life free from fear, worry, and stagnation. Experience an abundant universe as you powerfully create happiness, relationships, health, and limitless opportunities. When you heal your mind, all things are possible. Hi, Dr. Balan A. Durr here today with my guest, Dr. Connie McReynolds, and we are talking about screen trap, the hidden dangers of excessive screen time for kids. So before the break, we were talking about some of the physical effects of excessive screen time. Mm-hmm. We kind of got off into the parenting stuff, but just quickly, what are some of those physical mm-hmm. Effects of too much screen time?
Well, as I think I had mentioned, the obesity, which is just the sedentary nature of all of this, because children really should be up moving around, playing and doing things outside the world. We also have the sleep problems. Yes. We have the reduced social skills. We have reduced language development, by the way, because children aren't really engaging in language development process, socio-emotional difficulties as well. And what's really interesting here, I think, that parents might not understand is that children, and this is all research-based, so this, you can pull this up anywhere, children who engage in more than 2 hours a day of video games actually have been found to score lower on language and thinking tests. So if you want a motivator, here it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the, and I'm just going to go ahead and talk about some of the actual physical, the negative physical effects of this, unintended, of course, but still happening. So, you know, some of the physical effects of too much screen time can actually be a form of motion sickness. You scroll the screen and you get a sense of motion sickness. There can be something where you kind of get like clawed fingers. So you get this cramping in your hands. There is also, you mentioned obesity. There actually can be damage to sperm because the heat from the laptop, you know, sitting in the lap and too much exposure to that can actually, you know, damage sperm. There's also an increase actually in the number of pedestrian accidents, meaning people are not paying attention to where they're going and what they're doing. And they walk out in the street because they're on their screen. And you know, and then they get hit. So there is again, like I said, we mentioned obesity. There is also eye strain. There is, you know, holding your neck in certain ways. And so they call that text neck. And then also sometimes getting a sensation that your phone is vibrating, but it's actually not. Right. So because you're kind of it's expected, it's, you know, you feel like it's there, but it's not. So
all good reasons to monitor what you're doing here. Right. I mean, we're going to end up with people having a little, you know, funny looking fingers here and such. So it's
and,
also,
and let me just say this one too.
Mm-hmm.
I think I caution, and both of my children are adults at this point. The youngest, my son, you know, he's a young adult, still in his teens. But even with my daughter, who's in her 30s, I've told them both, we live in, you know, a metro area, the Chicago metro area. And so while the area, the community we live in, the suburbs, is actually pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there have been no, you know, like you might have a break-in or two or whatever, but, you know, but I live across the street from law enforcement, so we don't have much of that going on. But that being said, I'm still telling them, stop walking around with headphones on, and mm-hmm. you're not paying attention to your environment. You're not engaged. You right. don't know who's looking at you, potentially following you. You don't know, potentially know if harm or danger is mm-hmm. is about to come upon you because you're disengaged from your environment. Mm-hmm. So I think that's another, you know, important issue when it comes to physical safety.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I wanted to go ahead and get into more deeply, you know, some of those, you know, academic, cognitive, and mental health issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's obviously the anxiety and depression, but I definitely, let's talk about those. But again, let's talk about those cognitive effects, some of which you've already talked about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and all of it's very real. And, you know, even those earbuds, you put them in and people are, you know, walking around talking to someone and, you know.
And you know, as a psychiatrist, I'm going, are they hearing voices? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, they're on their phone.
There used to be a time, yes, when you saw that, you knew kind of what you were dealing with. And now it could be anyone walking down the street is doing this. And you're tuned in. It's like, wait, oh, yeah, okay. Right, they've got their phone. I'll just say, you know, I see so many people of a kind of a certain age where it doesn't matter what they're doing. They're still holding their phone in their hand. You know, people are trying to balance food or whatever, and they still got their phone in their hand because they don't know how to just put it down, put it in your pocket, you know, whatever you need to. They're so attached to holding on, physically holding on to that phone. You know, that's when you know it's gone too far. Put it down and do what you need to do. You don't have to hold it all the time. When we talk about some of those cognitive difficulties, when we think about how the brain develops, it's through repetition, as you were mentioning earlier. And what are we repeatedly putting into a child's brain or a young adult's brain? And I do think it's very interesting. The Surgeon General has come out with this position, and I think it's a very important one for us to consider in society. We really need to be paying attention to this. And I used to have an article out in the lobby of one of my clinics where it was talking about the developers of a lot of these social media products that came out, and they actually are sending their children to what are called tech-free schools, and they don't allow their children to be on social media until they're past the age of 16. They don't allow their children to have cell phones until they're around the age 12, because they are aware of what's happened. And some of them have actually come out and said, if we'd known now what we know now, things would be different. We would have developed these products differently mm-hmm. because the impact has been so significant. Mm-hmm. We're talking anxiety, we talk depression, and people say, well, how can a game cause anxiety or depression? Well, when we look at the style of games, the type of games that are being played, this is one of the factors I'll always ask parents. It's like, what are they playing? you know, if this is a first to shooter response, we have a lot of evidence in the world that these actually train brains to function differently than children who don't play those games. There's research that just 20 minutes of exposure to this over a 2-week time frame actually physically changed the brain's structure as measured through MRI studies. Just that small amount. And I have had children come in who are playing 6 to 8 hours of this a day.
How much time was it that?
20 minutes.
Okay.
Daily for 2 weeks. They did pre and post MRI studies on a control group and the interacting group. And this again is published. Some of this is in my book. You can dig around in the back there in those references. And when I talk about the gaming, I've got it all in there if you want it. If you want to go digging, it's there. It affects children's brain development. It affects our ability to communicate, because if we're only interacting with what we call a 2D screen, we're not living in a 2D world. We live in a 3D world. And that's part of what you're kind of talking about, is we get so wrapped up in this 2D world. And I don't know if you watch any of these kind of YouTube videos of people in these virtual, wearing their virtual screens, and they literally will punch holes in their walls. They knock their TVs over. They kick people because they're not even present where they are. They're so wrapped up in this virtual game that they're wrecking their house. And then they come out of that and it's like, oh my gosh, I just punched my my TV screen. And so I trashed it, because they don't know where they are. They literally do not know where they are in physical world.
I think it's the movie Player One, where I actually got to see exactly what you're talking about, right? The folks are punching and kicking and carrying on. Somebody falls off the, flips off the couch. you see how wrapped up people are, but again, it's because their lives are so difficult that they're seeking escape. So that was the thing that I also saw, right? And then how much money you're spending, you know, getting gear and getting weapons, just all of that. And what happens if, you know, you get taken out and you lose all your stuff and it's just people falling out. It's really rather astonishing. So I think it's also, to go back to what you were saying about the 20 minutes a day, I'm not sure, you know, like, when, again, just using something that is an activity been a long time, when people are having their children take music lessons and they tell you to practice a certain amount of time every day, I think it's probably more like 30 minutes or an hour, but I don't think that we would have considered 20 minutes a day would have made that a measurable change that that you can see on MRI.
Yes, it's that significant.
And right.
I really just want parents, it's not to say you're not doing things right or doing something wrong. It's just for building general awareness of these discussions that we're really just not having enough of around this. This really eked on. It was kind of like a slow flood. You know, it came, it seemed intriguing. It's like, oh, I want a little more of this. And then pretty soon our entire world is inundated with all of this. And we haven't really kept up with setting healthy boundaries for this and really trying to help children make wise decisions. And really the addiction piece and how you monitor that is where the behaviors, looking at the behaviors, if they're paying more attention to the social aspects of this interaction on the game versus, you know, interacting with children and going outside and playing, there's some measures you can look at. What's the outcome of these decisions that we've been making here? And how can we alter this and do it in a manner that's compassionate? And I think that's one of the pieces, is be compassionate with the child and understanding that they really do like to do this. They're feeling connected. And so building other ways of connecting that are more, I would say, based in the 3D world, where they can learn problem solving. We have a whole group of people who really don't have much resilience. So difficulties come along and they fall apart because they truly don't have the skill sets that they could have developed. And understanding, well, if this person wants something and I want something, then I'm just going to kick them and get it.
Kind of thing. You know, I was just like, I can, I'll, when you say that, I can actually see, I can see a kid doing that. But I tell you what, so I just, let's take a break. And then when we come back, we're gonna pick up on this. And, you know, what are the signs that kids display when they're getting too much screen time? What are some approaches that parents can take, you know, and, you know, even how, you know, schools and educators can help reduce screen time as well. So we'll be right back. So before the break, we were talking about some of the impacts and some of the things that parents can do in terms of the recognition and realization. But I think, again, one of the things that I think it's really important is the realization, just even on a basic fundamental level, that any activity that we do over and over again, we are rewiring our brains. And if you think about it in that, kind of basic fundamental context, then that can be the framework to say, again, in any activity, finding the balance in it, is this something that I want to rewire my brain to do or something that I don't? Now, obviously, just to acknowledge also, when we experience something that's highly traumatic, it doesn't have to be multiple times. It can be, you know, just the one time that is so severe and so significant that it literally rewires the brain and that one occasion. So, but again, just in that, in something less harmful, but if you get this kind of repetitive, consistent exposure, we're rewiring the brain. So parents, think of it in that way. Again, if this is something you want your kids doing, and then do that and do more of it, but in a, again, in a measured way. But again, I think the other part to think of it too is anytime I do more of one thing, I'm going to do less of something else. What is the significance of that, of what I'm saying to, when I say that to people? For instance, I find when I drink more water, then I eat less junk food. And so that's me doing more of a positive behavior, which kind of just in its own natural way replaces more of a negative behavior. When I say a negative behavior, some junk food's okay, too much is too much. So, but that, again, think of it in that way. When I do more of one thing, it automatically means I'm going to do less of something else. And if I'm doing something, in the case of our kids, if they're doing something less that they need to learn to do in order to develop themselves to be a fully functioning adult, then that is obviously, you know, to their detriment. And so that's why we're having this conversation today. So what are some, what are some of the signs that the kids display when they're getting too much screen time?
You know, one of the big ones really is aggression and temper tantrums. So regardless of the age. So when we think of temper tantrums, we might be thinking of the 2-year-old or the 3-year-old. This can be the 15-year-old. They just do it in a little bit different way, but they can be even harder to manage when you get to that level. So the difficulty with some of these games, when it builds that aggression, we think about the reward system within that game, which is to win. So if you've got to do these aggressive behaviors, you're literally wiring in aggressive response patterns into the brain. And so parents then start to see these changes in their child's personality, their response processes when they're trying to get them to go do something. There's any teenager could be a little bit reluctant. So I often say, you know, we can't fix teenagehood, but we can look at these other things that are contributing to the difficulties and making it worse for you as a parent. So parents, this is really to try and help your life be better as you're raising these teenagers. You want to tackle this earlier rather than the 15-year-old who's already figured out he knows how to work it to get what he wants. One of the things, too, is when we think about replacement, which is a little bit what you were getting at, you replace one thing with something else that's more healthy or more balanced. And that can be, and I kind of talk about, I'm going to edge just a little bit on this one, which is creating tech-free time zones within the day, the structure in the family. And guess what, folks? This means parents, too. So this means everybody turns it off. TV is off. The radio is off. The streaming, everything's streaming. All the phones that are buzzing and going off and texting all your friends and family members and the FaceTiming. And you know, the list can go on kind of long here. So we're talking about.
I tell my son, go outside. He'll go ride a skateboard.
Yes.
So go outside. Go play.
Go do something else that does not involve this thing that's in front of your face. Mm-hmm. So put that down. And, you know, I even recommend, you know, little lock boxes, particularly at night. So if you have kids and if you don't know how to turn off those services, parents have parental controls. You need to have that set up on every electronics in the household that kids have access to so that you can control when they're on it. I know so many parents who don't even know that exists. So you can do the parental controls where you shut it off to where it doesn't matter if they're trying to get on it at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know they can't get on it. And then we've even had parents who have a lockbox inside their bedroom, inside a locked cabinet so that everything goes in there at night and shut everything off.
To limit the breaking and entering.
Yep. Yep. Don't need to reinforce the B&E structure in life. So we want to really get a handle on this. And the longer it's gone, you are going to be kind of walking up a rougher road. But I can tell you that the more you do this now, the greater the rewards will be for both your child and you as time goes on. And yes, they'll probably be 30 or 40 before they thank you for it, but just realize you're doing the right thing.
So, you know, so here's the other thing, too, that we actually haven't talked about, which, of course, is one of the signs that they're going to display is, you know, being bleary eyed. And you know, don't want to go to school or their academic performance, you know, the grades are dropping, right? And the reason being is because, of course, they're tired. Yes. So they don't necessarily want to get up and go to school. If they do, they can't function well. So that's also a key sign as well.
Really looking at the behaviors, what are you observing in your child? What's being observed in the classroom? You know, is this child just unable to respond, seems groggy, just disconnected? These are signs. If you ask your child to do something and you can't get them to follow through, well, a lot of children don't want to follow through. But again, what are the parental reinforcements? And here's the caveat. Do not use tech as a reward for improved behavior if you're trying to reduce the amount of tech your child's engaged in. You have to come up with other reward systems, things that are meaningful. And I'll have parents say, well, you know, we've told him he'll have more screen time if he has less screen time over here. And it's like, okay, let's kind of have another thought here about what this can be. How about family time? How about, you know, is there a concert they want to go to? Is there something in the community that you can go and get engaged in? Can we go to the park? Can we plan a family vacation? Can we do these other kinds of activities? Game night at home. People have kind of forgotten that this is an option. So, you know, create a game night, whatever night it is. And I will say, many times parents feel like they have to have their child in a lot of different school activities. And what we really are recommending is choose one valuable activity. They don't have to be in five to where every night they're going and running and doing something. And I've had children who are so exhausted just from over commitments to sports and other kinds of school-based activities. There's nothing wrong with those, but discernment.
It's
Okay,
but it's
balance.
always about balance, grasshopper,
Yeah,
balance, you know.
balance.
So the other thing too, and I just this is kind of not so much about gaming, but it is about, again, you know, tech and device, et cetera, is sometimes I've also seen what can happen is that, again, because you mentioned about the issues around connection and resilience, that when adolescents don't have these skills, they haven't learned how to connect to themselves, value themselves, that their dependency on a boyfriend or girlfriend through their phone is so high that it's that without it, I've seen the kid fall apart. And again, they're just, you know, and so of course they're sneaking and doing other things like that, but I can't live without this connection to this person, which of course is really an indicator that something is really, really wrong, and that child or adolescent needs help and needs support, needs to learn some other, some other skills. So, and we've only got like about another minute or so, but I just want to say one, can we quickly get into what some of the things that the schools can do? Screen time and then of course how folks get in touch with you.
So,
What can our school officials do other than being the parent, right?
Well, I really think we all got in a little bit of a bad habit, during the pandemic, where I think schools in some cases are relying far too heavily on the whole process of the video and the screen time. And how about just getting back to classroom activities that the children are actually grouped together in groups? They're working together as team members to solve projects and such without a lot of screen time involved in that. And I think, we talk about arts and crafts and just music and just all these enrichment programs that somehow got cut out. And what we know is the right brain development happens through those kinds of enriching activities. And we can't just have everyone in their left brain, which is this, tech world. We have to be able to balance that between our cortexes to have a balanced life. So let's take a look at, are we really engaging in that classroom activity? My mom, like I said, my mom taught second grade for 32 years. She didn't have a computer within 100 miles of her when she was doing all of that. This was 22 little, six-year-old kids in a classroom and managing that. She did have a fish tank, which was entertaining, things like this, where they could learn about aquatics. They can learn about a different lot of different kinds of things. So I really think there's nothing wrong with us kind of rethinking what is our focus in the school, in the classroom. And I know we're kind of wrapping up. So real quickly, my website is www.ConnieMcReynolds, so ConnieMcReynolds.com. I do have a free brief assessment up there that if parents want to understand, is my child dealing with some auditory visual processing problems? You can do that. You can sign up and get the first three chapters of my book for free with signing up for the newsletter. And I promise I'm not going to pummel your emails with a lot of newsletters. And then, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I do have now, this is kind of tailored for adults, but if you're helping yourself, you're going to help your child as well, which is Chaos to Clarity. It's really a practical guide for overcoming disorganization, stress, and burnout. So that's a free guide as well on my website. You can reach me through my website. My email is Connie@mcreyno.com. I'm happy to chat with anyone. So just give me a ring.
So let me also say that I would highly recommend your book, Solving the ADHD Riddle, excuse me, Reynolds, Solving the HD Riddle, and that your use of neurofeedback as a non-medication, non-invasive treatment for ADHD and some of the symptoms associated with PTSD. And And with that, I want to thank you so very much again for joining me today, Dr. Connie McReynolds. Of course, you are welcome back anytime.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here. Always a delight to be with you.
I am your host, Dr. Balan A. Durr, awakening and empowering you to live out your infinite potential, to live life in a sweet spot. I'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us today in the sweet spot. Share, follow, and like us on social media. To learn more, please visit BalanADurrMD.com, spelled BalanADurrMD.com. Join us next week, and remember, when you heal your mind, all things are possible.